Welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the official podcast of everythingaction.com.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the podcast for week of December 27th, 2021. Our final podcast of 2021. I'm your host, Zach, and this week we have Chris.
Hello.
And so we are back. We didn't have a regular podcast last week, but hopefully everyone listened to our Home Sweet Home Alone commentary for Christmas. Our Christmas gift to everyone is to force everyone to watch a horrible Home Alone sequel. Hopefully that was less horrible with the commentary. But yeah, we are back for our last regular episode of the year. Very, very slow news week. I think just between Christmas and New Year's, like, no one's really doing anything. No one wants to do anything as far as like all the film studios or anyone else doesn't really want to put out any news. But there's a couple things, and then we'll dive into like a bunch of stuff that we've been watching. I know I've been watching a ton of big stuff. That I'll talk about in various levels of spoiling. Try to not spoil some and then spoil others. But let's jump into the little bit of news that we have, which is mostly trailers. So we got a new trailer for Uncharted, which is out in about 2 months from now in February. And Tom Holland, tearing it up right now in Spider-Man. But he's going to be Nathan Drake in the Uncharted movie, a younger Nathan Drake, which I think it's basically a prequel to all the games. It's going to be like an early younger adventure for Nathan Drake. And then Mark Wahlberg is Sully, and then they're teaming up to find the lost treasure of Magellan, because apparently there's like a bunch of like treasure galleons that Magellan had that got lost, and they're like, whoever finds them, they're worth like $5 billion. And then they're up against Antonio Banderas, who like is a rich villain who believes his family is like the like rightful heirs to the ships, and is gonna like kill anyone who gets in his way to get them.
Sounds about like a Uncharted game.
Yeah. Well, the odd thing is, I mean, we saw in the first showing is still in this trailer. Like, it's weird that like it's a prequel, but then they're like pulling specific like sequences and like plot points from like later games. Like they're pulling like a lot of stuff from like 3 and 4. Like the cargo plane sequence is like literally the exact same sequence from 3.
Yeah. And then
the stuff with like Nate's brother is from 4, which are like way later than this movie's happening.
Well, technically, that would have happened, the brother aspect, which they just failed to mention in any of the games, because I feel like the brother thing was sort of like shoehorned in.
Yeah, he doesn't get mentioned until, Sam doesn't get mentioned until like 4. They're like, oh yeah, I have a brother, by the way.
And it's like super tragic.
Yeah. But it looks fine. I mean, Mark Wahlberg is like, I mean, I guess reserve judgment to the whole movie, but like he seems like a fucking terrible Sully. Like even when they like put the horrible mustache on him, it's still like no, he is not Sully.
He is probably gonna take that off.
Yeah.
Like that's probably just like
that's gonna be like the the Tomb Raider movie with Alicia Vikander, like they had like the she had the dual guns at the end.
Oh, the classic Laura look.
Yeah. Like I feel like that's gonna be like it's gonna be a stinger at the end of this movie, like, look, he's got the mustache. Come back for Uncharted 2.
But he still looks like Mark Wahlberg. It's not like, oh, you tricked me. You know who would be a good Sully? I mean, it's like I'm trying to figure out the ages and how to make it like look well and be a franchise thing. Like, if like Josh Brolin.
Like,
he would be a good Sully.
Well, I know, like, Stephen Lang was in that fan movie, movie with Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, but like Nathan Fillion's a grown man, and so it's like,
yeah.
So like, you know, like you gotta age up correctly. So it's like,
I mean, pretty much everyone says Bruce Campbell, which I mean is the obvious choice.
It would be, but I feel like Bruce Campbell with an older Tom Holland.
Yeah.
So
Mark Wahlberg is just the worst choice. Like he just
looks too fit.
he's too much of like a jerky asshole vibe, and like Sully is like a super like friendly, warm, like, I mean, he'll do stuff where he'll take people out if he has to, but like he's like super like paternal and like cracking jokes and warm, like that everything Mark Wahlberg is not. So that casting choice is just I'm afraid it's gonna ruin the whole movie, but we'll see, I guess. But it's just it seems terrible. But that's gonna be February 18th next year, so get ready for that. And then we also, if you stayed through all the credits of Spider-Man No Way Home, you saw this. But they also put it up, Marvel put it up basically a couple days afterwards. But the first trailer for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which is coming, I think, it's going to kick off the summer, for at least Marvel-wise. It's going to be in May next year. And it doesn't really spoil anything from Spider-Man. It's just basically like because Doctor Strange is in Spider-Man, they're just like, hey, here's what Doctor Strange is up to next. Like, the only thing that like kind of ties in is like, maybe it seems like the spell that Doctor Strange uses in No Way Home seems to have more like, that's what's causing like multiversal stuff, more multiversal stuff than like. After No Way Home, like there's still like multiverse stuff happening even after whatever happens to Spider-Man. Like the multiverses are like collapsing on each other, or like there's like stuff's like disintegrating or something. And then also, and it has something to do with like Baron Mordo, like Chiwetel Ejiofor is back, and he's using this to his advantage to going on his mission to like destroy everyone who uses magic. Or
I mean, but that was a while ago, so he's just been taking his time.
Yeah. But, yeah, it seems like maybe he's using this, like, multiverse kind of, like, collapse thing to, like accelerate his, like, agenda. Like, oh, this is a good excuse to, I'll kill you, Doctor Strange, and I'll kill everyone who's, like, uses magic.
Yeah, but it seems like he could have done that during the snap.
Snapped. Hopefully it'd be an explanation of what the hell he's been up to, because like it's been a while since, it's been at least 5 years, if not more, because Doctor Strange snapped for 5 years. So there's that plus whatever else, however long it was from like the first Doctor Strange movie to like Endgame. it's gotta be close to like almost 10 years, I would imagine.
Right. Yeah, so Baron Mordo's plan was to just mess with Benjamin.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
No.
Benjamin Bratt.
Benjamin Bratt's like walking ability. Like he started with him, and then
I forgot that was like the stinger at the after credits scene. Like he was just like, he just showed up and like, I'm stealing your magic that makes you walk. Like I'm gonna take everyone's magic. There's gonna be no magic.
And then he just stopped.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess because of Baron Mordo and because of like the multiverse stuff that's happening, like basically like Doctor Strange has to assemble like a team that includes Wanda, because that was teased. I think that was basically teased in like the end of WandaVision. But and then also there's the introduction of America Chavez, aka I think Miss America is, or Mrs. America, or I think she got introduced like the same time as like Miss Marvel and like Miles. Like,
yeah, and, like I'm trying to remember what she looks like.
Yeah, Miss America, and she's on the team because her ability is she can like jump through universes.
Ah, okay, yeah.
So yeah, so she's on this like Doctor Strange team, and then it looks like Rachel McAdams is also on the team, even though she has no powers. She's just a doctor. She's gonna be like,
I'm the surgeon.
Yeah, like you're gonna jump through the multiverse, Dr. Palmer, and like hopefully nothing that happened to like your like what if doppelganger is gonna happen to you. Which That was one of the big things for the trailer too, is that it looks like they haven't confirmed that it is, but it looks like possibly like the like what if Doctor Strange is gonna be in this movie.
Like the evil Doctor Strange that shows up.
Yeah,
I saw that photo.
Yeah, evil Doctor Strange from What If might be. So that'd be kind of interesting too, if stuff from What If starts popping up in live action as well. But it looks cool. I mean, it looks like a Doctor Strange movie. I think probably the most exciting part of it is that Sam Raimi is directing it. So he Sam Raimi back into the world of superheroes after
in the Marvel superheroes, nonetheless.
Yeah. He hasn't directed a superhero movie since Spider-Man 3, and did a couple of smaller things, but yeah, so that's pretty exciting. Hopefully we get some classic Sam Raimi style images or camera stuff going on, because that's one of the complaints a lot of people have is they get these directors, but then they kind of get funneled into the normal MCU style. But yeah, hopefully because of the multiverse, and hopefully because of maybe because they're really promoting this as it's the first MCU horror movie. So yeah, hopefully we'll get some classic Sam Raimi-ness going on. But yeah, so that's gonna be May 6th next year. So I don't know, we don't have any news about when the Disney. Next year's Disney Plus shows are premiering, so this might be the first MCU thing next year. I don't think there's anything before Doctor Strange, unless they just come out and be Moon Knight or She-Hulk or something is gonna be in February or April or something, or March. We don't know anything as far as the schedule next year for the movies.
I know, they're just oh, these are future projects. Great. Now what? Don't worry about it. It'll come out when it'll come out.
Yeah. So, jumping across the aisle, we also got a new trailer for The Batman, which will be out on March 4th. And then one of the big pieces of news along with the trailer is that it's going to be on HBO Max 45 days after it hits theaters. So if you don't catch it in theaters, it'll be on HBO Max on April 19th. So it seems like they're doing they're flipping it for next year, where it was this year it was a day and date on HBO Max. And now it's theaters first, but it'll be on HBO Max very soon afterwards, a month afterwards, basically.
So it's earlier, I think.
Well, it's gonna be theatrical early. The theaters get just slightly over a month and a half of exclusivity, and then it'll be on HBO Max, which is the reverse of this year, where it was day and date on HBO Max and in theaters. But yeah, tons of new stuff in this trailer. I don't know about for you, Chris, but every trailer for the Batman, it just looks better and better.
It does. I saw that. I'm already excited about the concept, and more and more is great. Problem is, I don't want to see more because I'm at that point where I can start piece together things. I just want to halt.
Yeah, hopefully, I mean, we'll probably get maybe one more trailer, but yeah, if this was last year, I'd be good, done, I'm all yes. Set for March, yeah.
No more plot, no more, don't show me action sequences, don't show me setup, show me remixes of the same trailer or out of context dialogue, because everything just seems in context. So I want something that I would be surprised.
Mm-hmm. But the look of it looks awesome. I loved the muscle car Batmobile, and it looks like there's gonna be some awesome sequences of that where there's the sequence where he smashes the penguin's car, and jumps to explosions, and then the action looks pretty awesome. We got a new sequence where Batman's fighting guys it's actually Batman and Catwoman are fighting because they're teaming up to stop the Riddler for some reason. But they're in some sort of industrial warehouse kind of place with fog or steam everywhere, and then he's fighting Riddler goons, and it looks pretty awesome. He has a cool move, he grabs a gun, just smashes the guy in the face with it. And they also show that machine gun scene again, where he just apparently Batman's armor is so good that he just walk through just a full clip of machine gun fire and just not even be fazed by it.
Yeah, that part was a little OP because it seems like you know, he's like an Iron Man suit.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be like, is this supposed to be like his like year two kind of like it's he, like he's been Batman for a while, but it's not like he's like he's not like a full he hasn't been like Batman for like 10 years or something. It's like early but like established Batman, I think is what they're saying. Like people know Batman's around, but like it's not like he's like the like veteran Batman.
Yeah, it seems like he's been. It's not his first year, definitely, but it also seems like
it's not gonna be an origin story again. Like, I mean, God, yeah. Which I hope we don't get any sort of like we don't need to see the Waynes get gunned down again.
No. There's always room for that.
Yeah. Especially if Zack Snyder's involved, it's gonna be like slow mo, extreme. Like you're gonna feel every like you're gonna feel the bullet ripping into skin and stuff if it's Zack Snyder. But yeah, hopefully this one is just kind of like you know, just jumps right in. We know who Batman is. We're just jumping into like a this new Batman mystery, which I think they also said this one's gonna be more of like a mystery, like we're actually gonna get like Batman like detective mode, kind of trying to solve like the Riddler's clues and stuff.
Oh, you mean the time in Dark Knight where he did bullet forensics by recreating bullet fragments and fingerprints, and then he set up a crime scene? Like, I'm still confused about that whole scene.
And then he like turned Gotham into like an illegal surveillance state.
No, that part was fine. That I understood how radar works and, like, sonar to do bat signaling. That I understood, right?
Yeah.
But that's more of, like, a trick. And that's, like, illegal Wayne tech that he already pre-built that can do that.
Yeah.
The whole detective work of, like, tracking the cards, the fingerprints, the, like, dead cops and the playing poker, I still don't understand what that scene was about.
Mm-hmm. Or the classic Batman Forever Enigma, Mr. E. What's up, mystery, Enigma, Edward Enigma.
Yeah, that would've been fine. That would've been great if they just did that.
God, oh man, can you imagine if they did like an homage to that scene in this movie, where like that's how Robert Pattinson figures it out, Mr. E. I would love like a self-aware like mystery. That's stupid.
I'm fine with that too. Like it's so stupid, it works for me.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, after all the trailers we've gotten so far, like I'm very excited for this movie. I mean, Matt Reeves has been like he did the second and third Rise of the like the Planet of the Apes movies, and they're those are both amazing. So
did he also do the
he did Cloverfield?
No. I was confused. Matt Reeves and the guy who did that detective show on HBO and like the Americans.
Well, Matthew Reeves is the star of The Americans.
Ah, that's the one. I was confused. Him and this director. So I was like, when did this guy have time to do all that? And it's like, oh no, two different actors.
Yeah. No. Yeah, Matt Reeves did Cloverfield, the Let Me In remake, and then Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War of the Planet of the Apes. Which, I mean, all those... very solid. Especially this Planet of the Apes movies are like some like whatever year they came out were like in my like top 5 top 10 movies of those years. So yeah, so I trust him. Everything about this movie is good, so yeah, hopefully this will be an awesome Batman movie. And yeah, so we said March 4th in theaters, and then 45 days later, you can watch it on HBO Max if you want to wait. It'll be on HBO Max on April 19th. And I believe every Warner Bros. Release is doing something similar, where it's going to be like basically like if you wait a month and a half, you'll be able, you can watch it on HBO Max if you don't want to like rush out to the theater and see it. And speaking of Batman stuff, the last bit of news for this week, because yeah, like we mentioned, there really wasn't any news except for trailers, and then this bit of news that came out right before Christmas. Well, we got word that Michael Keaton is going to be back as Batman for Batgirl. So he's going to be back in the upcoming Flash movie, which is going to be out in November next year. But he's going to be back again for Batgirl, which is going to be, I believe Batgirl is still going to be like an HBO Max original movie. It's only going to be on HBO Max. But I think this kind of confirms what there was kind of like people were talking about, like, oh, Michael Keaton's going to be like the Nick Fury of the DC movies now, where like his Batman just shows up in like all the movies.
But like, it doesn't make sense why he had to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll probably get answers when like Flash comes out, and then whatever happens with like Flashpoint. Because I think basically like Flashpoint's going to happen in the Flash movie, and then it's going to be like, that's whatever going forward in like the DC movies is like, that's what like that movie's gonna like set up whatever's gonna like the future of DC is gonna be basically going forward for that. They're just gonna like reset everything and be like, this is the new timeline, or this is the new canon, or whatever.
We're going back to the Tim Burton timeline.
Yeah, everything happens in the Tim Burton timeline.
It's the Nexus event that basically sets everything off.
But so Mike King will be back. He's going to be back as Bruce Wayne. And then we're also getting J.K. Simmons is going to be back as Jim Gordon from his previous appearances in DC movies. Like his slightly longer appearance in Zack Snyder's Justice League compared to like the Joss Whedon cut of Justice League, where he's in like one minute, like he was in a scene for like 2 minutes.
In a blink and you miss it moment almost.
Yeah.
Just like show up and turn on a light.
Yeah. And Leslie Grace is going to be playing Batgirl. And then Brendan Fraser is going to be the villain. Who I don't think they've confirmed it yet. Like a lot of people are saying he's going to be like Firefly.
Interesting.
Cuz there was a recent or like pretty like well regarded like Batgirl arc that involved Firefly. Oh, I guess yeah. People are like reporting it as like facts. So I guess
he is Firefly.
I guess he is Firefly. So Batgirl versus Firefly. And then yeah, continuing the Brendan Fraser renaissance, which yeah, keep that going. and it's gonna be directed by the guys who directed Bad Boys for Life, which was shockingly good.
On paper, it should sound bad, but I guess like it's charming for Bad Boys for Life.
Yeah.
This sounds great already.
Yeah. So yeah, no release date on this yet. It will be on HBO Max at some point in the near future here, maybe possibly after the Flash. That would make it like a 2023 release. So. Maybe, yeah, hopefully we'll get some sort of like release date for this soon. But interesting times for the DC universe, the movie universe. Because some people are just doing their own thing. Some are tied into like the previous things. Like who knows what's going on.
I could see them trying to like space it out, so in case something fails or it doesn't stick, they can just wipe it clean again.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like that's what's going to happen.
Well, I think the Flash movie is going to really like kind of reset a bunch of like, it's gonna be like, this is like a, like our big like reset moment. And then if they're going to like try to like do like a connected universe again, like it'll probably come after the Flash and be like, okay, the Flash reset everything. Now we're gonna have like connecting universe again, or they're just gonna keep doing like, people can just do whatever. It's the multiverse. They can just do whatever they want, and we'll figure it out later. Or like they don't have to be tied into anything. Which after they started doing that, like things started to improve like vastly. like after they said like you could, people can just do whatever they want basically, then you got like, you know, you started getting like Aquaman and, you know, Joker and Suicide Squad and like Birds of Prey, and I Wonder Woman 1984 was terrible, but Zack Snyder's Justice League.
So, they're experimenting, but there's got to be some focus.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I think Shazam 2 is next year too, and Black Adam. So I guess we'll get like an idea of where DC's going, definitely next year with all those movies. So yeah, so that's pretty much it for news this week. So why don't we jump in the show and tell? And I know you were traveling all over. You were like all over the place. Like last week and earlier this week, Chris, I don't think you really saw much, did you?
I had time to like catch a few things with family and friends, sort of like throw things on and try to watch a good amount.
Mm-hmm.
So, first up, I watched Encanto.
Okay.
The Disney musical they put out that was supposed to like hold over fans of like Frozen, like anything that's a classic musical Disney. I forgot what they planned it, but it's like they alternate between like the non-musical Disney movie and then like the full-blown musical movie.
Yeah, because
this is their musical one.
Yeah, because Ryan the Last Dragon was earlier this year. That was not a musical.
No, it was not a musical.
And then this this was a musical.
Yeah. Encanto is a story about like this magical village full of people who've been protected by this family who have all been granted like a gift, like for a power that makes them special, and it's ruled by this like grandma who like started this village and made this magical town, but like not everyone's magic, it's just like they live in like a bubble basically, because the years ago it was like they lived in like Mexico and there was a band of raiders that were just terrorizing the town, and all the townspeople, like a select amount of townspeople, left. And then a tragic event happened where this woman was granted like a magic candle, and it sprouted out like the safety of like a giant wall, and it like kind of isolated them from the rest of the world. But over time, like as like she had her kids, and then she, all the kids had kids, like everyone had powers except for this one child named I want to say like, I keep forgetting her name,
like Maribel or something.
Maribel, that's it. Maribel. I want to say like a Luis, but like no, that's another character. Maribel. Maribel has no powers, and she's voiced by the actress from Brooklyn Nine. From Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yep.
Stephanie Beatz.
Beatriz, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, she has a big thing where basically when she was a kid, she, like, I think when everyone turns like 8 or something like that in the family, they are granted with the ability. And like, they're granted like a gift from the candle and the house. Like, it's confusing of, like, what is what, because the movie doesn't really do a good job explaining how the rules are sometimes. They do go just like saying everything else, but, like, key things like this, the movie just drops the ball. And this is where, like, the movie starts falling apart. So, like, the grandma has no power, but she's kind of sort of, like, the guardian of the candle, so that's her job. And then her kids, their house that she lives in, is made from her from the candle's power, so not like her power wasn't the house. And then all her kids have powers, and their kids have power except for Maribel. So like all her sisters, her cousins, her uncle, her other aunts, they all have some sort of like thing where it's like, oh, one cousin can hear real well, one aunt controls the weather, her uncle was a prophet. He could see like events in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I probably call him a seether or something like that, like whatever, a seer. But like they didn't like that a lot of his predictions were like bad things, so they kind of ostracized him. Maribel's father is just like all the mostly like all the guys have no powers. Like Maribel's father has no power because he married in her. One of her uncles is like married in, so he has no powers and he's fine with it. And then her cousins all have powers. So like her cousin, like her youngest cousin recently gets like the power to talk to animals. One other cousin has the power to like shapeshift. But for some reason, like they always remember Maribel's like non-power day, and they kind of like dread it over her. It feels kind of shitty. It's like this whole town kind of like points out that Maribel is powerless, and then it's like, well, okay, like calm your tits, everyone. Like it's like you don't have any powers too. Like I don't know why this is like a big deal. Just like this weird event, like just like the drama, the newest member of her family gets powers. People think she's jealous, and it's like fracturing the family. And so they start blaming her for like the weakening of everyone's powers and like the emotional state of everyone. And like they shit on Maribel. It's like real. It's like it instantly goes from like, oh hey, like Maribel, don't worry, you don't have power. So like, how dare you, Maribel? Like you're tearing this family apart. And there's no major event that really shifts it. It's more like Maribel points out, it's like, hey, something really wrong with the house. Like, nothing's wrong in the house. Like, shut the hell up. To then, like, them losing their powers. And then just, like, Maribel, you did this. It's just like, what? Like, it just... It's so weird. But, yeah, and then the weird thing is, there's no villain. Like, in a Disney movie, there's no big thing for them to rally against. And that's confusing, because we watched the ending. We didn't really watch it, like, 3 times to kind of figure out, like, how it explains itself. Because the movie was like, Maribel could be the reason there's no power. And then they're explaining that, like, she doesn't really have power. But then they do this bullshit thing where, like, her power is that, like, she can bring everyone together with, like, compassion. Because she kind of plays therapist to, like, everyone. Like, she kind of, like, listens to everyone and, like, points out, like, and has hope. So they're, like, doing that bullshit, like, no, your power is hope. Like, you give hope to people. It's like, the fuck are you talking about? Like, everyone else here has, like, super powers. Like, they bring more hope. Like, she's a sister who is, like, of a Hulk. And it's, like, she goes around and, like, builds things and helps people. It's, like, that's hope. And then she has a sister that, like, brings, like, spring all the time. Like, she's basically Poison Ivy. And then... It's kind of like this weird, like, everyone's like, it is like a bootleg Umbrella Academy, because their idea is that they're unified under their grandma, who is, they're all kind of, like, afraid of, or, like, they're not afraid, but, like, they're very stressed to, like, be perfect around her. So then, not really spoiler, but we're like, oh, is the grandma the villain? Like, but then they didn't make any sense, but the movie sort of, like, I don't know if it was intentional, but they kind of made it seem like the grandma was the villain, but then, you know, we're like, that can't be right, because they hyped up how much she sacrificed to do all this, and then that she lost her love of her life, and it's like, maybe it's like, you know, maybe she's regretting it, and then it's like, no, that's not it, and they're like, okay, well, then what's the villain? Is it the house? Because the house is, like, what everyone lives in. Oh, I forgot this one bullshit thing. Not really bullshit, but just really have it don't treat Maribel right. So, when you get powers, you get your own room. But until then, you share a room with, like, all the family members who don't have powers. And it's, like, super not nice, and it's tiny as shit. And they call it the nursery, because technically you're supposed to be in there from until you're, like, a baby until you're 8. And then you get to move into your own room, because the house grants you a room. Like, a door shows up, and you get to, like, if you open the door, like, that means you have powers. And here's your power. And here's your kick-ass room that's, like, themed after your power.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So Maribel, she has her ceremony as a flashback, and she gets no door, no power, and then no respect for like 10 years. Like, it's, she's not like a 12-year-old in this movie. She's supposed to be like in her 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So like at least 18 or something like that. I don't know. It's really this weird thing that messes with everyone's head is that, like, I don't know how old everyone is, like certain people. And then I don't know how Maribel's sister is related to her because she does not look like her sister. Like, it looks like a whole new person. I was like, who is this? And it's like, oh, I'm your sister. I'm like, wait, what? Like, the way she say that, she had to say it out loud, like, you know, sis, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I hear that right. And then I was like, Maribel, as your sister, I'm like, wait, that's your sister? How old is he? Like, how old is Maribel? Like, it just made no sense. But the fact that it's like they keep pointing out Maribel sleeps in this, like, shed in this house with her cousin. But then, like, the cousin gets power, so he moves out. Like, and then she's just left alone in the shed. Mm-hmm. Like, so they think she's jealous. Like, they sort of set that up, even though we know better than that. But then they point, okay, now here's another minor spoiler alert. They point that out to, like, the uncle, where, like, he potentially was another, like, outcast person, but he has powers. So, like, I don't know why they're, like, shitting on him to make him the villain, but it's like, no, the house gave him powers, because it's like, they also hype up the other thing that, like, the house has to deem you worthy to give you powers. Like, that's what I'm saying, like, who's the villain? So, it's confusing. Because the movie sort of sets up rules and then sort of doesn't explain it and then just, like, leaves gaping plot holes where, like there, since there's no villain, we have no idea who to, like, team up against or kind of hope against, you know? It's like, you hope for the family to stay together, but then it's like, well, what's the opposite of that? Just, like, you want them to kind of treat Maribel with respect? Because they freak out that they don't have power. So she's kind of like, oh, like, I'm... you know, life's the same with or with that power. So they're like, shut the fuck up. Like, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, that's what I'm confused. I'm like, no, they're kind of assholes. Like, I don't understand this. So, yeah, it just does, it does a good job up until a certain point. I like the music. The music is catchy. If you like a lot of Latin flair, totally all about that. This was a great, like, family-friendly thing. And it's not as, like, annoying as, like, Frozen songs are, but at least Frozen had, like, defined villains and roles. I mean, did you see Frozen 2?
Not yet, no.
Okay, Frozen 2 suffers from this problem also, where, like, there's no villain in Frozen 2, and I don't know why they continue that, where it's, like, the answer to the problem was always inside, or some shit like that, right? Where it's, like, oh, no, but, like, what was the problem? The problem was you didn't believe or some shit. Like, you know, like, so stupid. Like, this threatened people's lives. And, like, it ruined, really, it potentially could have destroyed a family. But, yeah, Encanto kind of just glues things at the end to kind of, like, haha, everything's better. Oh, hey, look, like, we're together as a family. Haha, more song. Like, wait, this doesn't explain anything. And more song, and then this is over. Like, and then it just abruptly ends. Even when it finished, we're like, what the hell just happened? Like, you can't just sing out your ending. Mm-hmm. They did. They're just like, and it's over, and we're together, blah, blah, blah. Like, we're a better family. It's like, no, you're not. Like, a lot of shit you can't take back was said. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, you guys try to outcast, like, your own family member. And it's the point where, like, this wasn't the first time you've done it either. That's why I'm like, what is happening? So... yeah, it just kind of, like, falls apart plot-wise, but story animation and, like, character design, pretty fun. So, give it a shot. Maybe, I'm not the only one. Like, if you like, look up reviews, everyone points out the same flaw where they just, like, don't understand how this movie, like, what was the point? Like, what... besides, like, the house was in danger, but we still don't understand why it was in danger, and I still don't understand how they fixed it. They just, like, sung a montage, and it was over. And I was like, what? And then there's no time to analyze it, and it just, like, boom, over. End credits. So. Then, to follow that up, I saw 8-Bit Christmas. Mm-hmm. The Neil Patrick Harris new Christmas story tale. You saw it, right?
I didn't get a chance to see it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you saw it, but I'll talk about it. So, yeah, it's just a modern retelling of A Christmas Story, basically.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, I've heard it's very Christmas Story, just except instead of a BB gun, it's an NES.
The NES, it's got the same beats. It's got all the things that they do get, like the time error correctly, where like the kids are limited technology wise, what they're doing, and like they have it's a great nostalgic trip, because I feel like since like we kind of grew up at the end of the 80s, like if you were in the 80s prime as a kid, this is like exactly how, you know, you would be trying an NES and then living through that like kind of boring era. It just, the only problem is that this movie suffers is that, like, by today's standards, thank God we don't need to live like we used to by like retail shopping like this, and then just not knowing when shit's on sale and not calling or just getting information.
Well, it's still like that, like the PS5 and the Xbox
Series X. But that's like a known issue. But the PS5 is like a known issue nationwide. Yeah. It just seems like the town that the people are in, because so the movie sort of tries to say it's taking place in Chicago, but it's like at least 40 minutes away from Chicago, and the kids, like the main kid and his friends, can't get to their store. Like their town is out of NESs, and the only place you can get an NES is like in the city part, like in the main hub, you know. So their whole plan is just like trying to get NESs or play more NES, and it does a fun job of recapturing like the Goonies kind of adventure spirit. The only thing is, it does that. The point of the movie is also kind of like just to be silly, and then it hits you at the end to be super goddamn serious. Like, it left field out of nowhere, and you're just like, oh god, like all the feelings, and then all the like oh man, like Christmas isn't about like gifts, it should be about like the memories you make, you know. So I'm like, what? This movie did like a good job of explaining, like, this kid needs an NES. In fact, him and his friends all need NESs. They're doing like wacky illegal shit to get an NES. But it's fun. I definitely recommend it. I definitely could see this as a Christmas classic over time. Like, you just need more repeated viewings.
Yeah, I mean, it got like really good reviews. Everything I've heard about it, everyone's just like, oh yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, for like, if you saw this in theaters, I don't know, but the fact that it's just on HBO, and then
it's been HBO Max forever, because it's their movie. It'll be on HBO Max forever. So
that's it. It's not going away. It's not like you're not gonna get like, oh, it's streaming to someone else. It's like, no, it's just gonna be here. The only thing I would say is that it could use more NES stuff, because they kind of like, for me personally, like they kind of just tease a little bit of certain things. They play up like the fact that it's like, you know, the Super Machine, and then here's some games, and here's some licensing issues. But they like, here's a few licensed clips. But they do this bullshit thing where they invent like a fake game to like be this one of the pivotal moments. Not like a giant pivotal moment, but it's pretty early in the movie where I'm like, that's not a real NES game.
Warner Bros. Has like, I'm sure they had to license to some NES game. Like,
they licensed like two. It's like Rampage and then Duck Hunt.
Yeah, you would think that Warner Bros. Would have like all the companies they've bought over the years. Like, they have to have like some sort of like they had this, some sort of archive game. Like, oh, we own this, we can throw this in there. Okay.
You would think that, but they just sort of made up a bullshit fighting game that looks way too new. Like, it looked like a flash game.
It's like Shovel Knight or something, where it's like looks like an NES game, but it's like way too, like the NES could never have done it.
Yeah, yeah. Like the pixels look too crisp, and it looks like a filter on an HD TV. So I kind of got pissed at that. I was like, what? Like, you could do everything else, but you couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's got a lot of heart. Got some fun moments. The setups are fun. I feel like it takes a little bit of everything that everyone likes. The Christmas aspect is very good. The Christmas story aspect is like exactly the same beats, but Because it's got, like, bullies, it's got, like, friends, it's got, like, family moments, it's got the holiday, it's got sibling issues, it's got a little bit of adult jokes, which is pretty cool. I definitely recommend it. I don't want to talk so much about it, because I feel like I really want you to see it, so I get, like, a full opinion. But I say it's, like, a great Christmas movie. Is it a Christmas classic? I don't know. Only time will tell about that. Mm-hmm. What else did I see? I don't know, I wrote it down. As I was driving back from Chicago, I was writing down the movies I saw this year, just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Did you finish Hawkeye?
I did finish Hawkeye. We can talk about that in a moment. I guess I'll talk about Gunpowder Milkshake. I was, like, watching that on my phone.
Okay.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's definitely another movie.
I was going through my Netflix stuff, and I was just like, wow, I have so much Netflix stuff I have to watch. Like.
Yeah. I felt that way too. Once I kind of looked at like the top movies that came out this year, and I was like, I did not catch up with like current times. Oh, okay, yeah. So I kind of like Gunpowder Milkshake. I'll talk about it real quick since like I gotta watch it again because I feel like I missed certain parts. But I like it. It's got, like, fun, stylish action. It's got a story that, it kind of reminds me of, like, Hotel Artemis a little bit, where it's, like, very, it wants to be John Wick, but it doesn't know how to do it correctly, so it just does its own thing halfway through. Mm-hmm. It's got a fun, like, world where, like, assassins and like, gun control is just, like, a thing where it's like, oh, yeah, like, if you're coming here, like, put your gun in this box. I'm like, hey, you're going to dinner? Like, put your gun here. Oh, you're going to, like, a doctor's appointment? Put your gun in, like, the gun holder. Like, hang up your gun. Take a ticket. Like, it's a very grounded movie in that sense. But, I think it suffers from, like, budget issues where they really could have used more stuntmen in henchmen roles and not just, like, actors that are just, like, trying to be stuntmen. Because,
Just throw get a bunch of, like, really good stunt guys, throw, like, masks at them, and then just throw them at people. Like,
they don't do a lot of that. Like, they kind of do it, but then it's, like, when you start paying attention, it's like, wait a minute, like, this guy doesn't know how to take a hit, or, like, this guy is just, like, flailing in the air just because, like, you know, a foot, like, sweep past him, like, a foot away, and it's just like, all right, like, but, like, they're like, oh, they built up the character, and now it's like, oh, it's a nameless thug. I'm like, why did they put so much time in, like, showing me this character just to, like, kill him off? And not in a, like, not even, like, an awesome, spectacular way, but just like, oh, that was a scene. So the movie has that issue. It's very, like, stylized like a music video, though. I feel like the director who made Gunpowder Milkshake had a lot of work doing, like, music video shots. And by that, I mean it's a lot of wide shots, a lot of, like, tight zoom-ins that aren't typical martial arts shots. Just a lot of, like, what you would see in, like, a rock music thing, where it's, like, sweeping left and right shots and just sort of, like, overhead crane shots that you see when you want to show, like, a band, like, a full set of the band members. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I got that same vibe, like, when I was watching that. So it must be something that I notice in this kind of setup. But yeah, I definitely recommend it. I'm gonna watch it again myself, so I recommend it to myself again.
I gotta watch Gunpowder Milkshake. I gotta watch The Harder They Fall, because everyone says that's awesome. Like that, like,
you know, I gotta watch that movie too.
There was a bunch of other, like, Netflix ones that came out, like, this year that were like there was like at least, like, oh, Kate, like, with Mary Elizabeth.
I saw Kate. Yeah. Of the two, I like this better than Kate so far.
Okay.
Kate was stylish, but it's like, so Kate has the opposite, where it has really great choreography, just the plot makes no sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's super simple plot, where Gunpowder Milkshake, the plot is very, like, not as in-depth, but it's at least got a little more, like, drama to it. And then the action is like, okay, like, it's okay. But Kate did that thing where it's like, oh, okay, no, it's like massless, you know, mass thugs fight Kate. It's like, I get that.
Mm.
So, I would say if you're going to pick one for like a quick viewing, pick Gunpowder Milkshake over Kate. But Kate wouldn't be bad either. I saw Kate, so I can say it's just like, of the two, it's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, I also like saw Don't Look Up. I was like drinking while watching that with family. Not a great movie to watch while drinking because it's gonna bum you out.
Mm-hmm. It's getting very mixed reviews.
Apparently, some people are calling anti-critics, where it's like all they want to do is like shit on movies, which I get, but I mean, that's still a critic. If you're an anti-critic, you're still a critic.
Mm-hmm.
They say that basically, yeah, it's like it's like not subtle at all about like its political points, it's like climate angle it's going for, and like the whole like American politics game, and sort of like a satire that isn't a satire. It's very Adam McKay, but I feel like he kind of like, it's kind of like he didn't capture The Big Short. Like, he wanted to do like a Big Short type energy feel, but it just didn't hit as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's still funny. It's dark. It's dark humor.
He's been doing he did the other guys, but then that had like the like sort of like banking crisis plot in it, and then he went full on like housing crisis, bank crisis with like Big Short, and then he did like the Dick Cheney movie with Christian Bale.
I feel like that's a better like political movie.
And then that's just
a biography.
Yeah.
I haven't seen more of that Dick Cheney one because I saw like bits, but I haven't seen the whole thing. But this is very like a frustrating movie to watch because they explain what Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence's like point is, and then like the fact that like all their pleads fall on deaf ears, like impossibly deaf ears, where the beginning part is funny, where it seems very like where you think the beats are gonna be like the build up, but then the whole like ridiculousness of it, and then the escalation of it, but it hits hard on the escalation of just like ridiculous ignorance. But I guess that's like the point, is that, you know, in the future there could be like such like arrogance about like the obvious that we get to this like point in society where like just having an opinion like this, you're gonna get like strong reactions no matter what. Even if it's like, yeah, this house is on fire, they're like, no, it's not. That's not on fire. Like, it gets to that level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it got really frustrating for us to watch, and especially when I've been drinking, where I'm just like, why? Like, just shouting at the TV. So it elicited a great like energy for me. It definitely made me want to like, you know, be cautious about people in charge. So it did that job correctly. But this movie is like 3 hours long. It felt like so much. There was so much plot. There's so much like, there's like four montage sequences, and it's like a lot.
Oh, God.
It just seems. Yeah, and then this movie has that like frantic energy of like a what's the best way it was? Kind of like Armageddon, you know, where it's like the training montage and then the drilling thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has that like, wow, this seems like they should really take their time to explain everything. It's like, nope, we gotta keep going, we gotta keep moving. You know, like, we just trained a whole bunch of drillers to like go to be an astronaut. Like, this doesn't make any sense. So they kind of do that by explaining how deep space astronomy, astrologer. And then, like, his thing is that he's not, like, qualified really to do all the, like, science work. He just knows that, like, hey, he's really good at, like, detecting outer space, like, far out of planet, like, bodies that shouldn't be traveling that close to things. So he's the one who sort of certifies the comet thing. But really, Jennifer Lawrence is the one who discovers the comet because she's been tracking like weird shit in space and then goes like, oh, like this doesn't seem right. And because she freaks out initially because she realizes like what's going to happen. And then Leonardo DiCaprio just sort of like follows. And then he goes like, oh, shit, you're right. But because he sort of can keep calm because he... There's this really funny joke where he takes like Zoloft to calm down. So because he's like very calm during this whole like information, they just start believing him more. Where Jennifer Lawrence should be the right response, where she's like, no, you don't understand. Like the world is ending. Like you just, we need to like figure out a plan. They're like, you're too loud. Like you scream too much. We don't want you in charge. We don't want you to tell us anything. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio is just sort of like, yeah. The world needs saving. And they're like, yes, like you're the one. We're going to make you the face of this whole project. And it's sort of the like his rise and Jennifer Lawrence's fall. Like it does a good job with their thing. But that's not the main point of the movie. It's not like the intersecting like relationship between them where it's like while he rises she's having a great life, like she's having a terrible time and people are like looking down on her for telling the truth. And like, you know, it has that like, again, that's just like one plot too. Like it's like, okay, that's something to focus on, but then the overall plot is like, what are we doing to stop this asteroid? It's like, yeah, we'll get to that later. So it's got its parts, it's got its charm. I'm not gonna say it's definitely not my like go-to Anna McKay movie because it's like a downer. It's very like dark humor. It's very just like a reminder of like what we could be as a society. And it just like it's not a feel great movie. That's another way of explaining it. Just it makes you go like, holy shit, like we really should do some like checking and more like just sort of like responsibility. Just be responsible with like how we make big ass decisions and consequences. Mm-hmm. So definitely check it out once. Maybe watch it sober like I didn't do. Get like a stronger reaction. But I definitely don't need to see this movie again because it just made me sad. Mm-hmm. Especially during the holiday season. Worst movie to watch during the holiday season.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about enough for me. What about you, Zach? What have you been watching?
Well, we teased it a little bit ago, but yeah, the Hawkeye finale. I thought
still it was kind of weird.
It was fun. Like
it was fun, but think about this. I joked last 2 weeks ago that like if this was the Kingpin, really, his best squad was the Tracksuit Mafia.
Yeah.
That part is still weird.
Mm-hmm. And he has he seems like he has powers now.
He's more destructible than before.
He's just been taking roids since like Daredevil.
I mean, it kind of makes sense too, where if it's connected, he just doesn't want to get his ass kicked by just, you know, normal people.
Yeah, but he's like ripping doors off of cars and like taking like explosions and stuff. So
you know, not even explosions. He took a legit arrow to the chest.
Yeah,
and then the explosions were later. Like you know, it just that part was. I thought he was gonna have like a bulletproof suit, like a John Wick style, like Kevlar suit. Mm-hmm.
A bulletproof Hawaiian shirt.
We're just taking straight from the comics. I thought that was like a joke. I didn't know that was a real thing.
Yeah, that's like literally like a comic cover, like a comic cover, like a whole arc where he's like, where, like that's his like look is like the white jacket over like the a Hawaiian shirt and the hat.
Kingpin goes Hawaiian.
Yeah. But yeah, the Rockefeller Center's fight was on the ice rink was awesome. I love everything with Yelena and Kate. Like their like fight through like the office building was great. Like the chase fight, they're just like fighting each other and then also like complimenting each other.
Yeah, I like that. It was a fun energy because I feel like if it was too serious, it'd be out of nowhere.
Yeah, like there's like the one where like I think Kate does a sort of like flip move on her or something, and like you know it's like, wow, that's Kate Bishop does a really good flip move. And she's like, oh thanks, yeah, like oh don't make me start, I don't want to like you. But yeah, just definitely like it's not like this isn't like a like you know like game-changing, like, MCU show like Loki or something, but, like, definitely, like, a super fun, solid entry. Like, I would put it, I think I might put it above, like, Falcon and Winter Soldier.
That's fair. Falcon and Winter Soldier, their stakes was high in the beginning, but then at the end, it was like, yeah, it didn't really matter. Yeah. I keep forgetting, like, the villain of Captain America and Winter Soldier was just very, like, oh, generic strong people.
We want things to go back to how they were during the blip, because people were, like, helping each other and, like, united, and then never came back, and we, like, lost our homes, I guess, or something, or...
I don't know, Flag Smashers are so stupid.
Everyone's refugees now, so, and no one's, like, helping each other anymore. Because they hated, like, the Office of, I can't remember, it was Office of, like, Relocation or something, or Office of Integration, or whatever it was, whatever the government department that was, like, putting people, the UN, like, group that was, like, putting people back to where they belonged after the blip.
Yeah, now I'm just trying to figure out where that takes place during all this. Because the blip's, like, not that prevalent as a problem for, like, Echo or someone, you know? Like, she didn't get blipped, but...
Yeah.
It also seems like it was business as usual for Kingpin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not deep diving that yet.
Like 1,000% Kingpin is going to be back for the Echo, because Echo's getting your own show. So, like... Right. What's that? Like, everyone's just like, I can't believe they killed Kingpin. And it, like, he's begging. Like, there's absolutely no way he's dead. Off screen gunshot, like, no fucking way. Like, he's back. He's gonna be like the main villain of Echo or something, or other stuff. Like they're not gonna like just bring, yeah, they're not gonna bring Vincent D'Onofrio off back for like one episode of a show.
It'd be hilarious if he did, and then it would just be, like, wasted potential. But, yeah, he's definitely coming back.
Yeah.
Also, I feel the... Clint Barton didn't have, like, an issue being death anymore. I thought that was going to play a big role.
Like, he was going to, like, embrace his deafness and, like, become, yeah, like, more like a
take
or
off
something.
His earpiece. And yeah, he's gonna like, you know, walk through like some sort of sound device to make everyone else kind of freak. You know what I mean? Nothing.
Yeah.
So it's not really a hindrance to him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just did that in that one like episode 3. They did it like it's like he lost his earpiece for like a little bit and then he got it back and it was like, all right,
back on track.
Yep.
I know in the comic it plays a bigger, a more pivotal thing, but...
Yeah.
They just kind of, like, breeze through it. But overall, still a good series. Fun series. Just a little abrupt, too, which is like... Anyway, Kate, like, spoiler alert, Kate was like, oh, yeah, I told the cops on you, Mom. Like...
Yeah.
So kind of a dick move.
Yeah, they haven't said anything. Like, I would definitely be up for, like, a... season 2 of Hawkeye or whatever. I don't know what the plan is for like I think like Clint should just be retired now. Like that's like he should just be done. And then
this should be a spin off.
Yeah, and just yeah, Kate is the new Hawkeye.
Somehow.
They're building a new Avengers team basically. Like they're gonna like Kate's Hawkeye, Yelena's gonna be Black Widow, like Doctor Strange is gonna like I think that like the description for Doctor Strange said that he's like the central Avenger, so that I don't know if they're like making like Doctor Strange like the main leader of the Avengers going forward or something, but
it'll
be him. Like Sam is Captain America now. Like they're rebuilding the Avengers with like new the new characters. But speaking of Marvel stuff, for what I've been seeing, I saw Spider-Man No Way Home, which we didn't get a chance to talk about last week because we were off. And then I won't go into too much spoilers because I know you haven't seen it yet, Chris, and you've been trying to like avoid somehow you've like avoided spoilers still, like even though it's been out for like 3 weeks and everything has been online.
Just now, trying like to dodge everything.
Yeah. So if you saw my top 10 list earlier this week on the site, this is my number one movie of the year. I love this movie to death. It's amazing. It's everything you like were expecting it to be from the trailers and more. I had super high expectations and it blew the expectations away. Everyone who comes back from the previous movies, all the villains you saw in the trailers, are all great. And it's great because they either reinforce why we love them in the movies they came from. Like Willem Dafoe and Alfred Molina are as great as always as they were in the Raimi movies. But then Jamie Foxx gets totally redeemed from Amazing Spider-Man. This is what Electro should have been to begin with.
Oh, he should have been a blue dubstep man.
No. it's just Jamie Foxx is no, I'm just gonna be, I'm me, dog. I'm just gonna, I'm me, no blue shit. It's just Jamie Foxx.
They just made him a little too weird. Max Dillon in that version was different era.
He was Jim Carrey from Batman Forever, and then he turned into blue dubstep electric eel man. Which they kind of explain because it's a new universe, this universe is different energy, so that's how he's able to reform himself into a new form, I guess, is what they explain. So that's why he looks like regular Jamie Foxx now.
So he was Amazing Spider-Man 3 version, and then he just became a different version?
Everyone is coming from they're basically coming from the last time a point from the other movies, and they're coming to this. They're coming to the MCU universe.
Something morphs them, I guess.
Jamie Foxx, he got turned into pure energy. He kind of got dispersed into pure energy. If you remember at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2,
I forgot what happened to him.
So basically, he was able to reconstitute himself, but because the energy feel is different in the MCU, that's why he looks different now. Or he has a new, he's able to form himself into a new form. But there's a great thing where they constantly make jokes about him falling into a tank of eels. That's a running joke through the movies. People are just, he's just I fell into a veil of electric eels. And people are what? So they acknowledge how stupid that was and that becomes a running joke throughout the movie, which is great. And yeah, so much great fans they totally it's a sequel to the Tom Holland movies, but it's also an epilogue and or a sequel to the other movies too, because they they're paying off things that kind of were maybe left open from the Raimi trilogy or the Amazing Spider-Man movies, and then they're paying off here or continuing character stories from those movies. All those returning villains are great. Alfred Molina is great. Willem Dafoe is amazing. He is just if you thought he was incredible in the Raimi trilogy, he's as amazing, if not more amazing, in this movie. Just the way he's able to flip between Norman Osborn and the Green Goblin is just it's incredible. He just flips a switch and he's just this horrifying, terrifying presence. Just with his face, his face goes into the classic goblin sneer, and it's just oh god, something horrible is gonna happen.
He doesn't wear his mask, does he? Or his helmet?
I guess Miles probably, he smashes it pretty early on, and then he kind of gets a more, it's sort of more he kind of gets more of a cloak, more of a classic Green Goblin kind of cloak kind of style thing going on.
Okay, because from the leak photo I saw, one of the early ones, was just his face, his grin, in that hood. And I was what? Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that going to put paint on his face? Just I'm going to walk around as Willem Dafoe in a Power Ranger suit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, all the villains are great. But even with everyone who comes back, it's still they do a really great Tom Holland story. He gets a fully developed arc in this movie. Everyone who the main Ned and Peter and MJ, they don't get like lost in the shuffle of like everyone coming back. Like they're like still like the main focus, and there's like really good like great like storyline for all of them. And Doctor Strange has some good stuff, fun stuff throughout. So yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, Chris, definitely. Like, as soon as you can, see it because it's.
I'm trying to see it soon. It's not. Yeah, like I'm not by choice. I'm like, no, I won't support this. Like, I'm trying to.
I mean, I would say arguably it's the greatest Spider-Man movie ever made. So.
Even better than Into the Spider-Verse.
I mean, I think this and Into the Spider-Verse are like neck and neck. Like this has the exact same energy as Into the Spider-Verse, where it's just like a love letter to everything Spider-Man, except this time it's like the live action Spider-Man stuff. And that was like, and that was just kind of like Spider-Man in general. This is like specifically like if you're a fan of like the previous movies as well, then there's like so much stuff in this movie to love. Along with it just being like a great sequel to like the previous like Tom Holland movies. So yeah, it's the best movie of the year for me. So, and then I also saw the other huge movie that came out, though box office wise, like nowhere close to Spider-Man. But I saw The Matrix Resurrections, which is in theaters and also on HBO Max. I saw it on HBO Max at home. So I did not contribute to the box office, but Matrix Resurrections is definitely more of a mixed bag than Spider-Man. There's definitely some good stuff in there, but also like maybe an equal amount of like confusing / baffling stuff in it. I definitely got off like on the wrong foot for me, at least in like the first like 30-40 minutes, because it was like it's very meta, like to a point of like where it feels like it's kind of like up its own ass as far as like being like, aren't we clever that we're like referencing thing, like we're like commenting on the Matrix in the Matrix.
So weird.
Cause basically the setup is, you have like Neo, but he's Thomas Anderson again. It's some sort of new, like it's, you're not really sure what's going on at the beginning because he's like back to being Thomas Anderson, and he's a video game designer. And the original Matrix trilogy was a game, basically a game series that he made, even though, which is weird because like the Wachowskis are gamers. They know games. It's sort of like a weird, like no games look like this. Like they're showing like footage from the movies, like the previous trilogy, as like game footage, quote unquote. And it's like, that's not game footage. What are you talking about? That was just a weird. It's just such a weird. Like, why didn't you say they were movies? They were movies that existed or something. It's so weird that it's like specifically games that they made, and then they don't show any like gameplay of these games. And people were like, "Oh yeah, I played your games."
Anything?
No, they just show clips from the older movies, and it's like, look it's your game that you made. But yeah, Thomas Anderson is like the programmer of these games that is the Matrix trilogy. But then Warner Brothers wants a new Matrix game, which is, so it's like they're making a new Matrix.
It sounds like Space and then, Jam.
People basically said like it's almost like the exact same premise as Space Jam, or like it has so many similarities to Space Jam, where it's like Warner Brothers is like inserting itself into like the sequel process and demanding like sequels, or like it's a weirdness involving like meta sequels and Warner Brothers. And then there's like a brainstorming session montage where like they're like people are like there's this whole team coming up with, like trying to like come up with like ideas for like the new Matrix, and it's like, we gotta make a new bullet time. It's like, what is the Matrix? What does the Matrix mean? Like, it's just like, oh my God, what is happening? But eventually,
sounds bad. Like, all that does not sound like great.
Yeah, I was not like some people were like, oh my God, it's genius and clever. And I don't like this, this is just too smarmy
it went off the rails with like the concept of the meta versus meta, but then like Warner Brothers has to shoo in themselves in there, and like, ugh.
Yeah.
So, what are you guys trying to do?
Yeah.
Because the first movie I'm talking about, I haven't the trilogy set, just the movie. Very clear and simple sci-fi tale that gets complicated as it goes. Mm-hmm. But so far, the story here is like, oh no, it's like meta, and then they're trying to like acknowledge things, and then it's like it's trying to do a marketing thing. Like, what?
And then it's and then they're also like they're calling back to like specific scenes or specific lines from the original movies and like doing them again in this movie. So it's like, so you're seeing like there's like sequences or like dialogue that's like exactly the same as the like original movies, and so that like adds to the meta-ness of it of like, hey, remember this line from the movie, from the first movies? Like, here it is again in a new context, sort of. Or like this sequence is like exactly the same as the sequence from like the previous movie,
but slightly different.
Yeah, but eventually it does kind of like settle down after like you get through like this initial like kind of meta smarminess, and then it does like turn into like just sort of like a regular like what you expect from like a Matrix sequel. So once it gets to that point, it's fine. I will say the action is not that like it's fine, but there's nothing in this movie that is like that like is gonna like, you know, redefine action like the original movie or like even like the sequels, like the Freeway Chase or something, like, or the Burly Brawl. Like there's nothing in this movie that's gonna be like memorable. I'm like, oh man, remember the sequence from like Matrix Resurrections? And then it'd be like, no, not really, because nothing's memorable. I mean, there is some fun. They do like upgrade or like add some new concepts to like the Matrix stuff. Like they don't need to use like phone booths anymore. They can just like they like just like can like get pulled out whenever, basically. And they can use mirrors to like teleport anywhere around the world. So they basically use more mirrors as like portals. So it's like there's a lot of sequences where it's like, oh, we're in this building, and then like we jump to a mirror, and now we're on like a bullet train in Japan. Huh. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, where they can like jump. There's like sequences where they jump through like two or three mirrors, and they're like two or three different places around the world.
I did see that when like they kind of float through gravity. Every room's gravity is a little slightly different depending on where you orient it.
Yeah, it's basically.
I did see that.
They basically come like, you know, like, and it was in like Reloaded, but it's like the Keymaker, and he was able to like, open those doors, and then it was like that like kind of like white. Like space that had all the doors in it. That's kind of like the new like way they can like teleport around. Is I mean, so they jump to a mirror, and then they can like jump through like doors and mirrors, and, like end up in different places. And then they also introduced this new thing too, where like it's like instead of like the normal agents, which they're sort of in there, but they kind of like are only in like the first little bit of the movie. But the new kind of like security for the Matrix is like it's called they do like a bot swarm. So basically, if whoever's like running the Matrix, if they want to stop Neo and everyone from like doing whatever, they can like activate like civilians around them to turn into like basically zombies.
Oh, anyone can be like an agent.
Anyone can be an agent. They basically just like activate. All of a sudden, you'll see like everyone just get activated, and then they basically start attacking it like everyone, and then it turns like zombies basically. So. Which it's kind of cool. It also is kind of just like if you've seen like a zombie movie, they kind of like it's more like that. So and it's not as like visually cool as like seeing like an agent like morph into like someone, but it's still they do some cool stuff with it. So that's and then especially like the last action sequence, like they do a lot of like cool like bot swarm stuff. But like the fights, the actual fights, kung fu like choreography fights are not that. There's nothing like really memorable in like for that. Keanu Reeves, his go-to move is like you guys saw in the trailer, like he just basically sort of like does like a force push kind of thing where he just like blasts people away. And it's kind of this, like, instead of like doing like actual like karate, like he just like blasts people basically a lot now, which is kind of like boring.
Yeah. Or yeah. He isn't shooting one. He just does like a PG-13, like safety push.
Yeah. And then there's stuff like, I mean, it was in the trailer, but like Jonathan Groff from like Mindhunters is the Deuce Smith, which they but it's like he doesn't really have like his goal is just sort of like this vague kind of like like I want to control the Matrix again, sort of, or like, I don't want to be under control. There's a new person control the Matrix. I don't want to be under their control anymore. But it kind of feels like they didn't have it feels like they were obligated to put him in because it's like it's the Matrix. We gotta have Agent Smith. But then they had like no idea like. No, like, really, like, unique idea to do with him. So he's sort of, like, they're doing things for some reason. So, yeah, overall, I liked it. But there's definitely, like, a lot of stuff that's just, like, I don't know about this. Like, the meta-ness and, like, the action not being, like, it's not, none of the action is, outright terrible, but it's just like this. It's the fucking Matrix. Like you should be like pushing action to like a new level. Like
you're reinventing things.
That's what the original like movie did. Like it redefined action for like an entire like decade. And also, I mean, it's also like Keanu Reeves like can do like he's like crushing it with action like now. Like John Wick, like you can't do anything like equally even like John Wick in this movie. Like it's just like I don't know. That's definitely like one of the biggest negatives I would say is just like it does like the action just is not like it's just does not push like it we got it's been like 20 years since we got a new Matrix and like you want like you expect it to be like some sort of like new big like this is the new thing like this is the new like in that brainstorming sequence montage they have in this movie where it's just like we need a new bullet time like.
That's kind of disappointing. Where they couldn't add in yet another reinvention. Because think about it, John Wick reinvented sort of the stylized bullet action movie.
Yeah.
Which you know, the Matrix movies definitely reinvent too.
Yeah.
So what's up with them not adding something new to the mix besides, I don't know, magic mirrors?
Yeah, I think Lana Wachowski was more like concerned about like or like more interested in like the kind of like meta commentary stuff and like kind of like reflecting on like the Matrix's like cultural like the like what how the Matrix has like impacted culture and stuff since it came out and that sort of like more of that stuff and less like redefining action It's definitely more like the Trinity Neo relationship is like the huge pivotal part of this movie, and then also just like yeah, like commenting on like Matrix's place in like history and stuff.
See, movies that are trying to fight for relevance like that tend to just feel like you know it's out of focus because you watch The Matrix for the creative sci-fi take. And the innovative usages of action. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like they just sort of stuck to, like, we want to build up the lore within the movie. And it's like, that's the worst part to me, is that it's sort of like this, haha, like, we try to make this, like, a joke. Mm-hmm. The Matrix, first Matrix, like, if you like the first Matrix, it's a bullshit, like, product in the universe.
Yeah.
So, I don't like that. But I get they did it tastefully, but so far it doesn't seem like it was.
I mean, it's on HBO Max, so I mean, if you have HBO Max, like definitely worth checking out just because there. I mean, there's enough to like enjoy about it, but there's just there's definitely some like glaring like issues that I had with it. So mixed, but I think mixed for me, but like overall, I would say like it was solid. And then also the first episode of The Book of Boba Fett came out this week. So I saw that. I don't know if you got a chance to see that yet, Chris.
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay. We can talk about that then. Good.
Yeah. Great introduction.
Yeah. I enjoyed that they like just like immediately was just like, here's how I got out of the Starlight Pit. Like, just stop asking about it. Like, which...
It seemed really easy to kill a Sarlacc. They made it seem like it's hard to kill, but he killed it pretty quick.
Yeah, what did he like pulled like some sort of like oxygen line or something from a stormtrooper and then like used it like
for, I don't know how that... where did the why was a stormtrooper there?
Yeah, I mean maybe someone like maybe because like you get to digest it for like thousands of years. The Sarlacc, maybe like a Stormtrooper just fell into the pit like weeks earlier or something, or months earlier.
And then Boba Fett just kind of like knew the kill spot for the Sarlacc.
Yeah.
Well, he's has he been there before.
He's like punched a hole through like one and like its mouth or like some sort of wall and just like blasted it with fire and like was able to get out. Which I think it's what we all assumed he did anyway. So is that he kind of like blasted his way out of it?
Yeah, I just didn't think how easy it would be.
I was sad that like we didn't get like the like Legends version where like Dengar found him and they became like best friends, but.
I would have been fine if that happened.
Yeah, but instead we get kind of like the backstory of like how like he got left for dead by Jawas, who stole his armor, and then like picked up by Tusken Raiders, and they kind of like they were treating him as a prisoner until he like proved himself, and then I don't know if we're gonna flashback anymore in the rest of the episode, but like basically because he like proved himself that they respected him and made him part of the tribe maybe or something, and that's how he
there's gonna be definitely more flashbacks because they teach him how to fight with that stick, the gaffy stick.
Yeah, because when we saw him when he came back, he was just like fucking stormtroopers up with the gaffy stick. So yeah, he definitely learned how to use that from them at some point. And then so it was mostly flashbacks, and then we did get a little bit of like a tease of like what is coming, like what's gonna probably be the bulk of the rest of the episodes, which is just like there's some sort of mysterious rival group that's like trying to like take him out. They attack like Fennec and Boba and like Mos Espa, and then like they represent some other like criminal group probably or something.
Most likely.
And then we kind of get like an intro of like all the different like there's like the different criminal leaders that kind of come and like pay him respects, but then all of them seem like shady and like are like probably gonna like try to backstab him at some point.
Him.
Yeah. Especially
they're all gonna try to pull some
passion. Especially the one guy who like represented like the mayor who didn't show up and then was just like, we'll be back probably soon if you don't give us stuff. So. Oh, also I picked it up like I was like, is it? And then I was like, it is. Yeah, Matt Berry is the droid. I was just like,
yep.
There's no his voice is so distinctive. There's like no way you can't not hear it.
It's slightly altered, but if you know his like tones, it's Matt Berry.
Yeah. And then just a bunch of fun Easter eggs, like and like as usual for all these Star Wars, especially like the Star Wars shows that have gone on. Like Max Rebo was like alive somehow, and back.
I don't know how he got off that thing. He was like in the bottom of that boat barge.
So yeah,
he's fine.
Playing a new cantina. Like I think it was called Cantina Latina is the name of the song now. It's like a like the like Robert Rodriguez style cantina song. Oh, and then also, I don't know if it's exactly the same character or it's just the same model of droid, but there was like a like Star Tours Rex was like the dealer at the casino.
Yeah, he was like the dealer.
Yeah, which was fun. I was like, I had to rewind. I was like, is that Rex? And I was like, it is, or at least someone who looks like him.
I mean, there could be a whole bunch of different like pilots. So yeah. That's not the only one.
Well, he's a DJ now. He's the DJ at the the Galaxy's
the
Edge
bar. Yeah.
Cantina, yeah. But yeah, it's cool. Definitely super solid first episode. Can't wait. I'm definitely excited for like the rest of the series. Hopefully, and definitely excited because like some of my favorite Star Wars stuff is like the like underworld kind of like that. I read all those like Tales from Jabba's Palace, like bounty hunter stuff that was like expanded universe stuff. So. Hopefully, they really like dig into that stuff as like Boba like builds his like new empire.
It's different. I wouldn't expect him to be a kingpin like this.
Yeah. And then a couple other things for me. I've seen three episodes so far of Witcher season 2. I don't know if you've watched any Witcher yet, Chris.
I haven't watched that yet either.
Okay. Well, I actually before I started season 2, I watched the animated movie, like Nightmare of the Wolf, which was pretty good. Like I think if you like Castlevania, like it's definitely in that like that's like it's in Netflix style where it's just like you know like the Netflix is like adult animation style. just mm-hmm. set in the Witcher universe. So, and I think definitely check that out before if you watch that before season two, like it definitely like adds to because they reference things from that movie in season two. So if you watch the animated movie, you'll be like, oh, I know what they're talking about. But yeah, season two seems really good so far. I've seen three episodes. It's definitely like one of the probably the most positive things. It definitely feels much more focused. Because they're like going in chronological order now. It's not like they're not trying to do like the crazy like distorted timeline thing that season one did. And it's also like super because it's also super focused because like it's like basically two storylines. It's like because like Ciri is now with Geralt. It's just those two, and then like they're like it's like she like seriously like starting her training is to be like a witcher or like at least like a warrior with Geralt, and then you have like Yennefer's like it kind of involved with like the war that's been going on still between like the north and like this like Niflgard and Sintra or like the other like the northern kingdoms.
Come on, Niflgard is just like Death Kingdom. Come on.
Yeah. So basically, it's two storylines. They're going in like chronological order. It's like it's much more focused and it seems really solid so far. Like a bunch of cool monster fights already. The first episode was really fun, like kind of like easing back into the world because it had like a if you play like Witcher games or like know about the Witcher, like it had like a very like typical kind of like Witcher subplot kind of thing where like they end up in like this like castle, like Geralt and Ciri end up at this castle with like this like warthog guy, and then you find that it's like, oh, there's like more going on with this guy than you suspect, which is like a typical like Witcher thing where it's always like Geralt gets hired for like to like kill a monster, but then you find like there's like more going on with the monster than he thought there was going in. So like, yeah, like so the first episode is like a fun like kind of like self-contained kind of like easing back into the Witcher, and it was like a sort of like there's more going on here than you think than when you first like got into this episode. So
right. I mean, that I like the like subversive storytelling of it where you know you think it's one thing, then halfway through it becomes another.
Yeah. It's always like, oh, the monster isn't really a monster. It's like man is the monster, or like,
yeah.
Oh, like, or like it's only attacking because like they attacked it first, or like it's always this sort of like ulterior like reason for like what's going on that Geralt always discovers. And Henry Cavill's great as always. Like he's much more talkative this season, which I think they made an effort to like really like. Have him like talk more and not just like grunt and say fuck all the time, which is like that was fun in season one, but like it's definitely like yeah, he definitely is like more to say in season two. And also and then I'm definitely enjoying like the like Ciri becoming like a warrior or trained to be a warrior stuff more in like the first season. I was not really like her storyline was like my least favorite part of season one. Her just kind of just like running around the countryside trying to escape from things. Like this is like a much more interesting storyline for her. So
well, it's more like streamlined, so you don't need to remember shit and like callbacks.
Yeah.
And just trying to fit timelines in your head.
Mm-hmm. There is a if you need a refresher, there's like a 15 minute long like Witcher one season one in chronological order video that Netflix has. So if you want to watch that, they'll like remind you of like what happened in season one, but also like put it in the proper order too. So I would say maybe watch that if you don't want to like watch all of season one again, I would say watch that video and then also watch like the animated movie and then jump into season two.
So does the animated movie do anything for the story or just more?
Well, so it's a prequel. It's a prequel. It's about like Geralt's like teacher Vesemir, but
I see. Okay.
there's a lot of like they reference things, like they reference stuff from the animated movie in season two. Like they're like, oh, that attack that happened like long ago, or like this is like what happened when like the elves, like we had to deal with the elves or whatever, and then that's in the animated movie. So if you watch the animated movie, you'd be like, if they mention something from the movie in season two, you'd be like, oh, I know what they're talking about. I saw that in the animated movie. So it definitely will add like a lot more, like add more context to like season two if you watch the anime movie. And like Vesemir's like Vesemir, like an older version of Vesemir, is like a main cast member of season two. So you'll see like his like how he like became like Geralt's teacher and everything if you watch the anime movie.
All right, that's good.
And then last thing is I finally got around to watching Cop Shop, the Joe Carnahan movie, second like Joe Carnahan Frank Grillo movie of 2021. The other one was Boss.
The one that's not Smoking Aces, but is like Smoking Aces.
Yeah, I think if you like Smoking Aces, you'll definitely enjoy Cop Shop. And it also has kind of like a 70s kind of like vibe. It kind of feels a bit like maybe like Assault on Precinct 13 or something. Although it like much it's not like a whole horde of people attacking the police station, but it's like it kind of has that same vibe where it's like this police station's under siege. But yeah, basically Frank Grillo is like this like sleazy con artist who he gets himself arrested on purpose because he's like there's like two hitmen after him, one who's played by Gerard Butler and the other played by Toby Huss. And so he's in this police station, and then like Gerard Butler gets himself arrested as well, so that he's like in, so he's basically like in position to kill Frank Grillo. But then Toby Huss's character shows up and like it's like attacking everyone, and he's like super like he's like just like, even though it's like Toby Huss, like you know, from like all his like all other stuff, like he's kind of like an unassuming, like you wouldn't think he's like a like be able to take down a whole police station from his like previous appearances and things, but like he just comes in and like, kills almost everyone. And so it basically becomes like, oh, like Gerard Butler and Frank Grillo and like this like rookie cop are like under like, kind of like stuck in the police station, and like Toby Huss is like kind of like outside kind of like trying to like, get in. So it becomes kind of like a little bit kind of like a Dark Hearted kind of thing, where it's like they're kind of trapped in this one location, figured out a way to like get out, and then right. Like, and then it's like, oh, who does the rookie cop trust, because she's like, it's like Frank Grillo and George Butler are locked up, but then she gets like shot in the stomach. So it's like she has like possibly trust one of them, or else she'll like bleed to death. So it's like does she trust like the sleazy comment, or does she trust like the hitman who's like already like almost killed a guy in the jail cell with him? So it's like a lot of like that sort of stuff going on, and but yeah, lots of cool action. If you like previous Joe Carnahan stuff, like especially like, yeah, like Smoking Aces, like it definitely has like that kind of vibe. So yeah, I think definitely worth checking out if you're Joe Carnahan fan, or just like a kind of like cool smaller kind of action set, like 70s throwback kind of action.
So it all takes place in the
police station. Yeah,
police station only.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I mean, you get a little bit of like outside, because like Frank Grillo is like in a, driving in the car before he like gets himself arrested. So you get a little bit like outside desert kind of stuff, but yeah, it's mostly in this one police station. And yeah, Gerard Butler's in like full on like Den of Thieves kind of like scumbag mode, which is fun. Like he's just like a super scumbag kind of hitman guy. And Toby Huss is just like, along with being like somehow like this like super deadly like assassin, he's also just like insane. He's singing to himself, or like commenting, making like funny comments about things, or like he's like making all these like weird comments about stuff. So he has a super fun a role in this one. He's just like a crazy like hitman, like just totally like nuts. But nuts, but like competent. Like he's like crazy, but he's also like able to just like murder everyone. So yeah, I think definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen Cop Shop yet. It's super fun. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if like I think my boss level might have a slight edge just because like the time loop concept is like a little bit more like creative and like offers more it's there's a lot more going on in like boss level, but like they're like pretty much neck and neck, I think, as far as like Joe Carnahan and Frank Grillo movies for this year. But Cop Shop is much more grounded and there's no obviously no sci-fi elements or anything. It's just like kind of straightforward like 70s throwback. We're stuck in like a grindhousey. We're stuck in a police station with maniacs movie kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's on like you could rent it or you can grab it from like Redbox or something right now. So check that out. And that's it for me this week. So we can wrap things up. Definitely head over to the site. We've got, Christmas is over, but you can still listen to our Home Sweet Home Alone commentary if you want. That's still up there, and that movie's still on Disney Plus, so you can check that out. And you can check out, I put up my top 10 movies of the year and the top 5 worst movies of the year list, so you can check those out on the site. And I think we're going to have a report from PAX Unplugged up soon, so you can see what we saw from that convention a couple weeks ago. And yeah, all the other stuff is up on the site as well, so head over and check a lot of stuff out. And so for Chris, I'm Zach, and we will see you next week.
For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.